go ahead.
Thank you, Clerk Marlowe. We're going to start, call this meeting to order, laws and rules. If I could, thank you, Chair. Put more weight when you do it. If I could get a motion to approve the minutes from October 12th.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor of the minutes?
Aye.
We're going to go over the budget from the departments, and we're going to start with Mr. McGregor from the insurance department.
Hello.
Thank you. Are there any major changes? Do you have anything to tell us about it? And then the committee will ask questions if needed.
You know, our staffing is the same. We're having a deputy. And I have my senior claims analyst, Melissa, and I have an assistant, office assistant, Andrew, and myself. Don't anticipate any staffing changes. Premiums will probably go up. That's the way the market is trending, and also our losses are not terrible, but they are there.
And I take it you anticipated the premiums going up in the budget?
Yeah, anticipate about 9% on the property casualty, which is what we're concerned with. The workers' comp, due to the interest rate increasing on our reserve, gave us a nice amount to soften the blow of any increases to our to the county, to the towns, and the volunteer fire departments and the Ulster Community College. So we had about 800,000 that we were able to proportionately reduce any increases to them. So that's one good thing about interest rates going up.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Let the record show that Legislator Levine is in here.
The parking lot.
It is. It's the protest.
Aaron, we should start it without you. Hope you don't mind.
No, it's okay. I know it's a lot of departments tonight.
Yes, and we started with the insurance department, and he gave us a brief rundown of his budget. And if any legislators have any questions, feel free. If not, we're going to excuse Mr. McGregor. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up is the county clerk. If Nina and your and Alice could come join us, we'd appreciate that. Always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here. So thank you so much. I guess I'll start with my revenues and we'll go from there. So the reporting department, we're not in very good shape right now. We're down in our revenues over 2022 by 27%, so which is not surprising to anybody, right? There's no refi, there's no the real estate market, the inventory is down. So we actually put in for our revenues, we proposed for next year $1.2 million, which is a decrease. Right now, at through September, we're at $1.2 million, but I don't foresee us the revenues going up at all. I don't foresee the market, the real estate market, rebounding to the point that we'll have a huge increase next year. So I think 1.2 is conservative, but I think it's close to what we'll be doing in 2024. As far as motor vehicle, we have good news. We have really good news for motor vehicle, which is a surprising thing. Kathy Hochul was a county clerk at one time, and I think that helped us. We actually will start in January again 10.75% of all transactions that are done even on the internet.
Wow.
So that's huge for us, obviously. First of all, that the internet transactions it's not money out of the county's pocket. And second of all, we now, any Ulster County resident that does anything online, we will get 10.75% of that, in addition to everything we do in the office. So we were at 12.7 before. They dropped it down a little, but with the increase in the internet sales, they're saying that we should go up by 49% in our revenues. I don't know. I think that's a little wishful thinking. But anyway, we went up to $1.2 million. So we're hoping that that will offset some of the real estate market that we're losing at the moment with our revenues. And then, of course, we have our grant for records management, which is $57,050. We obtained a grant through a local government records improvement fund, and that will allow us to take our records that are rolled up from 1764 to 1825. It's 2.7 cubic feet, I believe. And we're going to have the Northeast Conservation Document Conservation Center actually conserve them, unroll them. We can't do it. They're all glued together and so forth. That resolution will be next month. There'll be a resolution to accept the grant, and then there'll be a resolution to accept the contract with the data center. So that that's the bulk of our revenues for 2024.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
So the second, they both say departmental income clerk fees. The first one that has 1.25, that was 2.4 back in 2021, that's recording fees, mortgage, et cetera. And then the second one that was 982 and is now 1.2, that's the motor vehicle?
Yes.
One? Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Tracy. Any other questions on revenue? Okay, I guess the next thing is personnel. Right now, in our personnel department, we have put in for some upgrades. We've done, but by doing this, we've also eliminated a records clerk position. So that records clerk position was $35,000. The upgrades amounted to, $29,000. So we actually saved the county $7,204 in salary plus $11,000 in benefits. And these upgrades, we're finding with e-recording and e-filing and everything being so automated now, we don't need as much personnel, but we need more tech-savvy people and an understanding the role that they play in the e-filing and e-recording. So all the employees that we put in for the upgrade have been here between 15 and 40 years. So they're all long-term employees that we have done that for. We have a couple vacancies, but those vacancies exist because we did promotions, we had retirements, and we promoted, but those individuals have the right to retreat back. So we have to keep those positions for 1 year because they do have the right to retreat back to those positions.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
So the head clerk position that's listed as 6, it's 141, they all have the same number, 1132. It looks like it might have been administrative assistant, and now it's head clerk. I can't tell if that's your most substantial shift, potentially?
That's Sarah's position. Yes. So, yes, that was an administrative assistant position, and she retired, and it did not make sense to have another administrative assistant. It made more sense to make a head clerk because we have a head clerk at the recording counter, mm-hmm. and this is our indexing and scanning department. So we wanted to have two supervisors equal in pay and in position so that each of those departments have a head clerk instead of an administrative assistant. The administrative assistant title really didn't fit anymore, Tracy.
So who is that someone, is that being filled by someone who's currently in the office?
Yes, and
that's
that senior index clerk typist position that's zeroed out. Do you see
the
that?
One that was 1153. 1152.
1153 senior index clerk.
1153. Okay. So that one is now down to the head clerk.
Yes.
And then what one? The one that's the 55-6, which is sorry, I'm giving the salary, not the number.
That's okay.
1410-1153. PR clerk that was zero and is now 55. What was that position before?
So that's the, wait a minute, So the 1153 was senior index clerk typist. We zeroed that out, and it became principal clerk 1153.
And then there's another principal clerk.
That's our principal clerk at the recording counter that we've had for
the one that was zero. And is, do you have one that was zero and is now 54, one that was zero and is now 55, one that was zero and is now 69. So, I mean, there's, I just can't account for all.
Okay, so, yeah,
is
okay.
Is there a way we
you
could?
Can. They're the same numbers. If you look at the position number, you'll see that they're the same number.
So we
for
have
those
two.
That are being flipped or eliminated and switched to a new position, you'll see the numbers are the same.
No, because that head clerk one was has a different number.
No, that's not. You're looking at the wrong one. It was the 11.
Got I'm looking in the
gotcha.
Budget.
Okay, I got it.
We have it's in your pack. I'm sorry. You have
oh.
The staff position summary sheet.
Okay, that'll
if you look
help.
At that sheet, that'll show you the
okay, I just consulted this number here, so now I can explain it. So 1153 was a senior index clerk, and we made her a principal clerk. She's at the recording counter, and she oversees all the judgments, the liens. She also was trained in the recording department on e-recording. And then we took 1385, which was a senior index clerk, and we made that a principal clerk, and that is our employee that does all the civil work, all the e-filing, all the appeals, and so forth. Both of these individuals handle all of the electronic filings in our office, and therefore, we needed someone in supervisory positions to be able to do that, and those are the two upgrades.
Okay.
And that just comes with a $4,500 about raise for that position, right?
Let me I could tell you exactly what it was. So
from 5023 to 54525.
Yeah, 1776 and 1779 are the two upgrades. One went from 527 to 545, and the other one went from 538 to 556. That's right.
And then some of those changes also happened in another division, right?
That's correct, in the records management division.
Thank you.
But no financial impact to the county. As a matter of fact, a cost saving by eliminating the one position and the benefits.
Sorry, the numbers you just said don't line up with what we have here.
Okay, so.
So the senior, the 1153 went from 5778 to 55673.
So 1153 went from 5778 mm-hmm. to 55673. So let me see. Hold on.
Yep.
For a second.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not the number that you just gave. It was 52.
Yeah. No, you're right. It doesn't. I don't know why.
The numbers don't line up.
She gave me. I don't know why. Yeah. No, you're right. So this is the one that was given to me. Yeah.
Okay,
so that's the, this is
have?
The right one. The 50,000.
Okay.
What's in your budget is the right amount.
Okay.
This was a sheet that was done for me. And the other one went from 50 to 54.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then one went from 40, I'm sorry, 48, yeah,
285.
60,
yeah.
963.
Yep.
There's three positions total.
$1385, $1153, and $1,400.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, I see how they
did the right under each other. Any further questions for the clerk?
Well, thank you. Okay, thank
you very much. Oh, I do have one more question, actually. Sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry. You, when you were referring to the, which is great, that we're going to get the 10% from the internet transactions, you said that they were giving you estimates. Who is creating, who?
Oh, New York State DMV.
Okay.
From the figures they were pulling off the internet that Ulster County residents did last year. So they do that for the whole state, all the county clerks.
Did they give you several years so you could see a consistency? Do you have relative confidence in that? I mean, you sounded a little... We'll be okay. There's a buffer.
I don't have complete confidence in it.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of things that come into play there that maybe they did not take into consideration. It just seems like a very high amount for us to increase our revenues by that. But maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
So we dropped it down, and we went with what they, you know, to a certain extent, but we dropped it down.
What had they recommended? You went with 125, but they had recommended what?
They had recommended, we dropped it down, I think 15%.
Okay.
Tracy, I think it was 15%. We felt that was at least giving us a little room to play with.
Yeah.
We were very conservative on the recording figures, so we thought that may be a little bit higher also. I just don't want to overestimate. I'd rather be under.
Right.
And then have, you know, be pleasantly surprised than have vice versa, and think we're going to get more than we do.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Are you going over or
no? No, if you have another question.
Yeah, so they're actually...
Okay, yeah.
So, office supplies,
okay.
You're at 35,000 budgeted, but you've never come...
Which revision?
4,000.4025. It's in recording.
Recording.
So you're budgeting 35, but you've never even, except for in 2020, you hit 22, but other than that, you've always been
okay, I don't have the figures there that what we've done for previous years. What are you showing
right
for previous years for us?
Well, okay, so like 21 actual was 16,848, 22 was 18,591. 2023 budgeted was 35, but so far year to date you only used 13.5. So I'm just wondering if we really need 35 in there.
Okay, yeah. So I think what we took into consideration there, and maybe we put it a little too high, I don't know. We took into consideration that now we're purchasing everything that's sustainable. It is costing us more within our budget to do that. We're also looking at the, we have a lot of paper. We file folders that on our movable files that cost us quite a bit. We get those through UARC.
Yeah.
And they're quite expensive and they keep going up. What can I say here? If you want to take $5,000, $10,000 from our office supplies.
John, what lighting you want?
4,000.3025.
Okay, yep.
Page 3 of 5.
Yep. Yep.
All right, then under miscellaneous contractual expense periodicals, you've got, for 2023, you budgeted 20,000. You've only used about 16 of it, and it looks like you've never gone above 20. Small numbers, but the only reason that would be
No, that's okay. What one are you talking about?
4,600.4635. The reason I'm questioning these is because our budget analysts have recommended that we start to try to contract these overestimations because we seem to just keep going.
Oh, no,
down
that's
this
fine.
Road.
Yeah. So are you looking at that in the recording department or in
that's
the motor
vehicle? That's motor vehicle, I think.
No, it's still under recording.
So that's all of our legal supplements or legal updates or legal books and so forth. So we always hit like around 20,000. And what are you saying? That's what we usually hit every year. What's it showing? I don't have it in front of
except
me.
Except for 22, you never hit that high. You're usually around.
Well, 22 was last year, right?
That's the actual year to date. You're only at 16.
Right. So
I didn't know if you had anything you knew about specifically.
So we get our end of the year updates. So all those updates come at the end of the year, right? For 2024, and we base our figures, or we try to base our figures on our previous year costs. So I have to say, I truly believe that 21-20 is a figure that we need it.
Okay, and then the next one down from that is the repair and maintenance of equipment. You've never gone above 5,500 really in the last 4 years.
Yes. So we put in the budget for a new HP printer. The one we have now can no longer be under service contract. So we now put in the amount we need for maintenance on that new HP printer. So that's why that's increasing.
The last one is under, this is motor vehicles now.
Okay.
4215, building maintenance and repair, shredding, recycling. You're at, oh, all right, no, never mind. I guess 22 was at 4500. Never mind. Disregard. Okay, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Nina.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate it.
Appreciate your time.
And everyone have a very nice Thanksgiving.
You
good holiday.
Okay,
yeah, thank
you
so much. Here.
Mr. Johnson, wake up.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Thanks for coming tonight. Council, if you could tell us about your budget, any changes, and then I'm sure we have a few questions for you.
Well, not a lot of changes in terms of the numbers that we have here. I'll tell you what I do have changes in the personnel. I'm losing another attorney. I just found out a couple of days ago.
Did you say you lost another attorney?
Yeah. He's gone to green imposture, so to speak. He's going to, at least. Not he's going to be, this is Richie Williams. He's one of my pretty experienced attorneys. So he's moving on. And I've lost Jim Laval. So, and that's a continued struggle. I've spoken to you guys over the years about moved on to much more lucrative paying jobs. So just a matter of finding replacements. It usually takes a while, and just finding them with training, which is just an added burden, but one that I gladly undertake over time. But it's just a matter of trying to find attorneys.
Is that going to affect your performance in any way?
The workload gets heavier. Everybody, particularly myself, because I'm the department head, and I'd much rather undertake the extra work than my other attorneys are already.
Do the best you can.
Yeah. But as you can see, that in terms of just our other asks, I mean, they're pretty in line with what we've done over the past few years in terms of equipment and so on and so forth.
The paralegal that you wanted to hire at the bottom, the executive said no to it. Have you come to a compromise? Or are we good on that?
I would imagine that they, that would be hopefully something that's on the table next year. I do need that. The family court attorneys, we have a quite a bit of increase in the family court work. So the way I have it now is the confidential secretary helps out the two family court attorneys on top of what she does in terms of helping them doing petitions, so on and so forth. I am actually going to lose, I'm going to be looking for our part-time investigator who I'm losing to you guys. Rich Wald is our part-time investigator, and he's going to be Legislator Walls come January. So I'm going to have to find that person. I'm in the process of, I don't have a legal secretary right now, so I'm literally also myself doing all the filings myself, dealing with all the, because I personally do all of the litigation management, outside litigation management, that's going to get, if I don't find someone pretty soon, that's going to get a little bit bumpy, because that position does quite a bit so far. The confidential secretary is helping me out with that, and a lot of it I'm just doing myself. We're a little bit strained right now, to say the least.
Do we have questions for the county attorney?
I do.
Please.
So professional services in 23 we budgeted $200,000, and for this year we're budgeting $150,000. So far this year we've accrued $69,000.
Right.
Given the constraints with the full time, I know that's not what we use them for, but I'm okay with leaving this number high. But do you anticipate coming close to the $200,000 for this year? With being at $69,000 right now, is there?
I don't know, Tracy. The reason why, and I think I said this last year, the reason why we have those numbers in there, because I never know.
Yeah.
I can never anticipate what's gonna.
Right.
I can't. I'll tell you this much. 2 days ago, I just got served with 3 lawsuits out of the blue, and they are that adult sex victims act in New York.
Oh.
And these are 3 lawsuits that go back to the old jail, back in 2004, 2005. So I literally just got those in a couple of days ago. And we also have those continuing child sex victims cases going. We've managed to get out of 3 of them. We had a total of, I think, 8 or 9. We've managed to get out of 3 of them. Outside counsel is handling the rest for me. And I have actually, since we can't find insurance for these things, because the earliest one goes back to 1958. 1979, 81, we have had trouble tracking down insurance coverage for them. So until we find or possibly may not even have insurance coverage for them, I have to pay the legal bills for those. I don't know what outside counsel is going to send me on a month-to-month basis. They could have expert witnesses or whatever it is. We have to pay that bill.
And I did have another question. The corporate
compliance.
So where did that live before? Because it's all zeroed out for all the previous years. And
I think it lived in personnel. I think it lived in personnel. I think they decided to move it over to my center.
Okay. And is that why did they decide to move it?
I think it's a legal one. It's a legal bill. You know, anything legal, they figure it should be coming through the county attorney's office.
Oh, just for this is for the outside legal services for only for contractual expenses. It's not. Do we have the corporate compliance personnel exist in your office?
Oh no, no. So like we
Tom, it's Mr. Gibney, right? He still lives in. Where he's in social services
he's in,
or personnel.
Tom is in health department.
Yeah.
Health department. Yeah. But we also use an outside consultant, Bonadea Group.
Yep.
So
that's
would,
that's the
imagine.
Bulk of what's
yeah.
happening here. Okay. Thank you.
I've read since Tracy brought up the corporate compliance that you have a title of a privacy officer.
County Privacy Officer Grant.
Can you explain that? Or is that private?
No. So on the
where
on
did you read that? I don't.
On the corporate compliance committee, I guess I've been designated or before me B, and I think even before B, Josh, whoever it is, and the county attorney's always been designated as the county's privacy officer. So. So there's there are 3 positions there: the county, the compliance officer, the privacy officer, and the IS department head. I guess whenever we get any kind of complaints through the hotline, I think it comes the Bonadea Group sends it to us 3, and we take a look at it, and if it's a compliance issue. The compliance committee deals with it, And if we take a look at it and we go, you know what, this is not a compliance issue, this may be a personnel issue or a departmental issue, then we'll push it off to that. But that's kind of our role. That's the best way I could explain it to you.
Have you ever gotten any complaint about legislators? Or that's private too. Because I see on the flyer that you advertise it, that you're accepting complaints about legislators, and I didn't know that.
Why?
Where's that?
I sent it to you, Tracy.
On what flyer?
Oh, you didn't know about the flyer.
I gotta see this.
The fraud, waste, and abuse flyer that's out.
Fraud, waste, and abuse. Wow.
From
great,
where?
Great graphic.
It's from the Ulster County Compliance Program. I mean,
it's
got a nice hotline thing there and everything, like the bat phone.
Yeah, that fraud, waste, and abuse. So keep in mind, the compliance committee's role has greatly diminished over the years, because typically what the corporate compliance deals with is usually like federal programs. Like Office of Inspector General. So a lot of it goes through like federally funded or state funded programs. Going through for the most part through DSS or any other department that gets state or federal funding. That used to be the crux of what my understanding of what. The compliance committee used to deal with quite a bit.
So it's morphed into something different at this point?
Well, remember some years ago, we kind of got rid of the bulk of what mental health used to do. We kind of send that out to the family services. Now we've brought it back, we're bringing it back in-house. But a lot of that has to do with making sure that the mental health and the DSS, those programs that are funded through the state or through federal government, through OMIG, make sure that they're in compliance with those statutes.
Because this flyer says improper business practices, mm-hmm. unethical conduct by affected individuals, mm-hmm. which include employees, volunteers, mm-hmm. interns, appointees, and then in capital letters, legislators.
It's in capital letters,
yes.
Well, one capital.
One capital. And then county officials, business partners, vendors, agents, contractors.
Right.
And it goes on and on and on. And theft, fraud, financial irregularities, management, waste of funds.
Right. So
you don't get a lot of calls on the hotline.
No, we don't. And in all honesty, in my time there, some of the stuff that we've gotten, we're just like, this has nothing to do with compliance.
Petty stuff.
Very petty stuff.
I bet.
And we'll ship it off. Well, the personnel say, hey, could you guys touch base with the department, or have the department head touch base with an employee or whoever it is, to make sure they can try to resolve, whatever issue it is.
Legislator Gavaris.
So I was going to let him explain, but it's just from a compliance officer myself for the hospital, that's exactly what my signature line of my email for the hospital says, to report suspected fraud, waste, or abuse. That's really the responsibility of the compliance officer, is for people to call the hotline and the compliance officer to investigate, but you're actually supposed to elicit it, because it's actually a protection for us, because if you encourage them to report it, they're not, hopefully they don't become whistleblowers, and then they get to share in profits from prostitution. So it's to our benefit that we actually encourage employees to report, or contractors or anybody to report. It's better for us to know about it than to get a phone call from the Office of the Inspector General that we're being investigated.
Exactly, which we have. I remember when I first came here, we actually had to pay back, I think it was like $65,000 through our department, DSS, to OMIG. We hired an outside counsel to do that, help us through that. But at as I said, you know, over the years, the we've kind of shifted away from you know, what it used to focus on, because our mental health department kind of got faded out for a bit there. And now it's back. But yeah, we from time to time we will. I know, like the early childhood intervention program and the daycare program; those are highly regulated, so we actually sit down, I think, twice a year. Voluntary group comes in and does an audit for us, and we'll sit down and go through with them. For the past few years that I've been there, the DSS has been absolutely excellent. They've gotten top scores for that.
Good. Anything further? Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you very much.
We're going to go to the Human Rights Department next, Commissioner Joe McDonald. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Now, it's my understanding this budget was done before you took office.
Thank you for bringing that up. It was. I did have an opportunity to go over it. And I think the only big change is the assistant that was budgeted for 2023 was not approved for 2024. And I could say, looking at the business that they've done over the past year, it was probably correct to do so. But I'm trying to build the department to where it will probably be needed for next year. So I can agree with it for this year, but we're building our office. I don't see anything else on there that's much of a change.
Thank you. Any questions for the commissioner? With that, Mr. McDonald, I thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I know we took the BOE out of order. We skipped over you. That's because you guys have a couple of resolutions. We're going to jump into that. And then after that, we're going to skip again and go over to 674 so we can, Mr. Donaldson wants to speak on a resolution. We can get him out of here. Thank you.
You too.
We did receive 47,000 complaints on votes this past Tuesday about our legislators.
How many were for me?
Oh my gosh. So, Board of Elections 2024 revenue is reflective of existing grants. We didn't put in our expected revenue. We do expect that we will get state funding, but that will not come to us until June of next year after the state budget. We also may get some federal funding. It really depends on congressional approval. Being that it is a presidential year, we do typically receive funding awards for the postal grant, which you have in front of you for this year. That is just for this year's postage expenses, as well as maybe some technical grants for technical infrastructure. And 4 years ago, we received a grant from a private group, and they have been in contact with us since then, so we expect we might get some additional private grant funding, but we did not put it in the budget because we do not bank on those things, so it's not reflected in what our worksheet said. Our expenditures are obviously our highest that we have every 4 years, being a presidential election. We have an extra election April 2nd, the presidential primary. All poll sites will be open for that, some amount of early voting sites based off of which parties are participating. We'll have the June primary. That's based off of a full June primary. We don't know what that will be until people file their petitions in April. And then, of course, our big election event next November, which we expect upwards of 85% turnout. And so these are our highest numbers that you'll see. I know in the worksheets, I don't know if they go back to 2020. I didn't think
they did.
19. That's great. That's not what we see when we do ours. So
yeah.
Contractual expenses, of course, being what they are. Printing fees to send out cards to voters.
printing fees for printing ballots. We are switching vendors for our printing. So that's a new contract that we just accepted that bid on Tuesday. A little bit lower than our current vendor. Let's see what else on expenditures.
Can I ask a question on expenditures?
Yeah, sure.
Professional services, other fees. That's 169 is the approved for next year. Mm-hmm. 169 and change, but that's, I mean, the line's been at 41, 15, 28, 59. These are actuals. So what is that line?
That's the delivery of the voting systems.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which this year, of course, we get billed after the election, so that's not fully expended yet for this
year.
And with the extra election, there's an extra election to deliver equipment for.
Okay. Thank you.
Also Switch Brothers, and he got delayed in his billing, so it's probably not even including the one on that.
Probably not. Their billing has been delayed for the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Going back to that for a second. So you're saying you budgeted $60,000. You're literally asking for an extra more than $109,000 extra.
So there's
also our warranty for our voting systems is in there.
But it's also the end of life. So we have a contract for Knowing.
Yep.
That had.
That's the poll pads.
Our poll pads, which had been originally a 3 or I don't remember the term length of the contract. That's coming. That included the annual maintenance. It is the end of that contract, and we are now on a annual agreement with them for the continued maintenance of the poll pads. That is the additional expenses. I see the notes aren't printed on your version. If they were, we put every
breakdown
for our notes in those.
Could you send them over?
Yeah,
that would be great.
Yeah,
we can email them to you.
Yeah,
just because it will explain the change. I can also say that after even just concluding this election, one of the things we're revisiting is the wireless provider for our poll pads. We usually annually budget around 44 to I think a little bit higher on the annual cost for that. And we were looking at going from Verizon back to AT&T using hopefully like a first responder service, which would essentially cut that in half. But we, being in the middle of an auction, we'll begin to investigate that now. I do also want to say, though, looking at the overall budget, in previous years we had sort of continued to carry roughly $300,000, if not a little bit more, give or take, on the year in grants. Due to this year being the purchase of our grants, we have basically expended that additional grant money down, and it will no longer exist, to my knowledge, at the end of this year, because we'll have it expended it all.
The tier and shoebox are going to be paid down. The voting systems are going to be reimbursed for what the county's already spent on the voting systems.
So, in addition to expending that $300,000 in grant money that we've sort of maintained over the past couple of years.
Shoebox goes back to
We're also going to be coming in at least $200,000, if not $300,000 under in the capital project that we did for this year's machines. So we've been doing everything we can to look at ways to make those savings possible.
Yeah, great. Any other questions on expenditures? Okay, personnel. We have our part-time pay rate is going up because we're going to be paying our inspectors $18 an hour next year. That's an increase from $16.50 this last election. That's to help us retain inspectors. It's been incredibly difficult to recruit and retain election inspectors since the presidential election and through COVID. The inspectors, more than ever, don't like the long hours. They also don't feel safe working at the poll sites. There's more antagonism that they're fielding while they're working, especially on election day, the election day, not so much during early voting. So in order to keep good inspectors, fill the spots, we're giving them a raise that was approved by the exec budget. We did ask for 2 full-time additional people that was rejected by the executive's budget. That is a reflection of the state legislature's, well, state senate passing a mandatory minimum staffing bill, but it was not adopted by the assembly. So based off of how many voters are registered in Ulster County, if that is adopted next year, we would have a mandatory of two more people in our office. So we budgeted for it, but it was not approved. We also asked for a 5% salary increase for our staff. That was based off of salaries of boards of elections that are comparable to size and scope, and also in our region that get paid more than our staff does, as well as looking at other departments within the county of equal positions, as equal as we could get them based off of the unique nature of the work that we do. That was not a part of the executive's budget. Did I miss anything in personnel? I don't think so.
Nope. Our part-time budget, I think we're fairly confident that is well-funded. Thank you to you guys, and we're able to work within it.
Yeah.
It accounts for the third election, and knock on wood, maybe we get away with not having to do one in June. But
it's not likely.
Elections just want to keep coming, so.
We did not budget for a special election.
Are there any contingencies for, God forbid, if we end up with a situation similar to what we were in 22 when we had to bifurcate the primary into August because of everything that went on with the map drawing, and considering that there's possibility that there's going to be another round of drawing, would, and potentially maybe, are we thinking that there's a chance that those lines might not be ready for petitioning in February and have to bifurcate again to have to hold another
It's always a possibility.
It's a possibility. The county also has positions that require special elections, like that we did not budget for.
Yeah.
There are the two primaries. They could already bifurcate those, the April 2nd and June 25th. If they land us with an August special, that would be a unique situation, but not one that we haven't seen, obviously.
An August primary?
Yeah, or a special. The August 22 was a special and a primary in Ulster County. So we had two sets of ballots to get out to voters. We did not budget for it. If you'd like to throw another special election in there, we would certainly not.
I would just say, I would look to amend at that point, and the best thing that we can do is, given next year's likelihood of us receiving grant funding, you would see a net no change to our budget because we'd be able to work within what we have.
We didn't go terribly over budget in 22, even with that extra election.
Any questions?
I appreciate the clarification,
you.
Though. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an extra expense to have, so on the unofficial results page, you have the 147, 137
budget?
Yeah. In previous year, each town was broken down. Is that an additional cost?
Yeah.
That's a good question. That's a growing pain with our new provider and our first implementation of the election. The data that they're providing to us, we've actively communicated to them that we're not pleased with, and they are actively going to be working with us over the next 3 to 6 months, especially Ulster County, more so than any of the other counties. This is a brand new vendor. They're only in about 5 or 6 counties in the state. They will be working specifically with us to change certain elements of their program so that we can meet those. Yes.
Yeah, we have some customizations.
There's a laundry list.
Okay.
That was
a big
one.
I
have no idea. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was.
It was making me crazy.
Yeah, and we were doing that manually. It wasn't an automatic.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So.
And it was just on the header, so in
the
town, you couldn't break it out.
Yeah.
What districts had.
The data exists. They just don't have a code to throw it in there. So the
first time
coders will be.
I can go on.
Working actively to add that in.
I'm sure you got it. Both of you got it yourselves.
Better now than next year.
Yes.
Yeah. It looked a lot nicer.
It looked nicer, but it was lacking some information.
And the early voting was up. Early voting and the pre-canvas of absentee was up right at 9 o'clock. Too much cheers and applause in the office. We work very closely with the IS department. They are the department that we interact with more than any other county department. And we did a mock election night recording demonstration with them the second week of October, just to make sure that we could get it as precise and up as soon as possible so that we avoid anything like we had in June when there was a delay on their end, so things were not up until about 9:10. So we made sure we had that tabletop exercise, and it was successful, and so we're going to keep doing that going into next year with our election events, just so that we make sure all of the bugs are worked out before the actual election day.
I would just throw out, this past year, we have worked better than ever with purchasing department. So at Jordan and their leadership has been amazing. Information services has been more than accommodating. We've just begun to have some conversations, and I think we're looking forward to working more with emergency planning to figure out some.
Emergency management was great with us. We had
technically five
poll sites that lost power on election day for some amount of time, and they came in, they brought them temporary lighting. Obviously, our machines were battery operational for a few hours. It never got to the point where we had to go into emergency procedures with that. But we're also looking at doing exercises where we would have to take our central operation elsewhere, because we have to really address and prepare for the challenges that are facing us. We've never had the issues that we have now with the public and safety of our office, and we're dealing with those things, trying to prepare for them. Obviously, things come up out of the blue, like today, when we got an FBI warning that election offices are getting mailed to the place with fentanyl. So we're talking to the sheriff's department. We got Narcan kits today. We got masks. We got gloves to open the mail, to open the absentee ballots. So we are, we know next year is going to be very hotly political, and we are the target of people's resentment and anxiety. So we will deal with it. We'll prepare as best that we can. On that lovely note, would you like to talk about our grants?
Do we have any questions for the commissioners? Answer them all. I do have a non-budget question, if I could bring it up.
Sure.
I'm sure Mr. Commissioner Quigley has shared my opinions down here where I live. Is there any plans to take a look at the election districts going into next year?
There is. We actually have to wait until the election is certified, and we have to redistrict the assembly maps. So while we do the assembly redistricting, we are also going to be looking at the election districts. We were given the maps for the legislature and the city of Kingston. The city of Kingston gave them to us 2 days before the deadline, and the legislature, we got the final product 10 days before the deadline. So that is an incredible time crunch to get election districts reapportioned. And so we will be looking at them again before the end of the year when the cutoff date.
Will there be local input?
Yes, we're soliciting input now, so anything you got, send along. Plattekill is already on our list.
Yeah.
As is Lloyd, Saugerties.
What did you see, irregularities?
One more thing.
Not necessarily irregularities, but due to the timing of our calendar and the way we have to inform everybody, like there was a gap between the voters being educated and being able to recall what they were sent, and whether or not they actually were sent became an issue, being basically relying on postal service.
Also, with the September primaries being pushed back to June, that card that tells them their poll sites, the state requires us to send us in May. We sent it as late as the state would let us.
And they actually yelled at us.
And they were mad at us about it, but we knew that people are snowbirding and they don't also get them, so we didn't want a bunch of inactive snowbirds. So we pushed it to the last day. Voters either didn't have a primary, they don't look at it, it said on there nice and big, your poll site might have changed, but it's sent 6 months ahead of time because they want to have the primary in there in June. So it is an issue. In September, it wasn't so much of an issue. They would get it at the end of July, closer to the election. Now the state has us send it in May, and it is an expense. It's very expensive to send the card. So if we were to send it again, you're looking at another $140,000 mailing to every single voter. That's why we don't do it again.
Is it possible to have, like, the way early voting is, you can be from any district and you just go into the site and it pulls up on the computer and it prints out a card? Is there a way to do that? Because I have to say, even just knowing your polling station, there's two districts in Worthing that two people had to drive almost 20 minutes to get to their polling site because of where they live.
So there is, you have to get special approval by the State Board of Elections to have an open site plan on Election Day. There's, I think, two or three counties that did it this year. And we chose to not do it because of the new voting systems. We didn't want to do all of the things all at once. So we're looking at it, but it would also mean closing some amount of poll sites. And also we have to grapple with the need for connectivity. So if anybody can go anywhere, we have to make sure they don't go from one place to the next and vote twice. So we have to make sure that those sites are interconnected like they are on early voting. And that is one of our limitations, because we have about 20 poll sites that have limited or no connectivity during the day.
They're known as vote centers, and we have actually gone back and forth on how to implement it. It's just a matter of when.
Presidential year is not the year to do it.
Yeah.
It is not.
Yeah.
So the next bite of the apple would be 2025 at the earliest.
Thank you. We're going to move into resolutions, and you do have two on the agenda, but we're going to do 652, if I can get a motion to postpone that at the request of the county clerk.
Second.
All in favor of postponement? Do you have a question?
No. Aye on the postponement.
There you go. I like your enthusiasm. 653. Authorizing the chair of the county legislature to enter into an amended funding agreement under the absentee ballot prepaid postage grant.
Second.
Any questions on this one? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And then we have 654, another one for the BOE. That's authorized. And second on that?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Have a good night, commissioners.
Thank you.
I want to skip over to 674.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Mr. Donaldson, you're on deck here. This one's setting a public hearing. Proposed local law number 16, that's amending the county charter and amending the administrative code for the county of Ulster to modify various provisions.
Second.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Dave, you want to speak?
I'm here as a member of the Charter Commission, and so I read through local law number 16 because that pertains to what the Charter Commission's work was. As you know, the two proposals we put directly on the ballot deal with only with Article 2 and 3. That's the only power a Charter Commission can put proposals directly on the ballot, on Article 2 and 3 in the Charter. The rest of them are done, those recommendations are given to the legislative body for the legislative body to act on or not act on. I will say that I'm impressed that the legislative body came put together a long list of these things, and they are right before you. I'm impressed that it was done, and it's, you know, I do like that. And I can tell you, we discussed every amendment that we recommended to the legislative body at length. Some didn't need much discussing, like, you know, fixing up, you know, the way the gender reads on him and she. I mean, certainly made sense. It was easy to do. And I've read through the entire thing a couple times, and there is one issue that I have to that I have to talk about is that it's on page 29 of the local law number 16, which is resolution, what did you say, 674?
Yeah, it's on page 29.
We don't,
yeah,
I don't numbers.
And can you,
I'm sorry, I need to interrupt, but can you tell us what section? Because
it's page 29 of the local law.
Yeah, it's page 29 of the C46.
Section 29.
It's C46.
Director of Planning.
I don't know.
Yeah, the Director of Planning. The Director of Planning, it was, we got people that wanted to change the way they chose on the resolution 674, local law number, 16. What we did was, if you'll note, when I was on the commission, I used my iPad and I used a little pen and I marked alongside on, even when I would read through whatever the recommendations were. And, and then when we met, I know what I wanted to talk on. And so you'll see that that's my little jotting on the side. Where it came to that, it said, why take away the small d democracy? Aaron, we have a unique way of choosing a planner. And the way we choose a planner is you can read right through all the stuff that was crossed out. County executives are appointed, and they are given a nomination by three people. Three people have to meet, of course, the state law, whatever they require for the requirements. But what happens is the planning board recommends three people to the county executive. The planning board is made up of all the members that are appointed from each town and village. They even have an alternate on each one of them also, and they meet all the time, and they meet at least once a month, and they go over that. So what has happened here in this, what seems to have changed, is it was discussed with the Charter Commission and was unanimously turned down. They felt that the way we choose our planner is unique, and it's small d democracy, because the towns, the villages, and everybody else, they have a part in that choice. And they offer three to the county executive, and the county executive takes within those three. And then, of course, they still have to be ratified by the legislative body. So my feeling is, I don't, just doing it the way the change that you did is just that it's just like any other one. And they're appointed by the county executive and okay by the legislature. No participation by any of the towns or the villages or anything like that. And I have a feeling that not only is this a unique way that we do it, and I think it's a better way, because we have not gone through planner after planner after planner. We have that continuity that's always there with the planner that we have. The one before was Herb Heckler, wasn't it? And he was there for a very long time. And what happens is he has a little bit, with the way it's set up in now, the planner has a little bit of, he's not totally controlled by the founding executive. And he's not totally controlled by the legislative body, because he's really answerable to that planning board. I mean, that's my take on it, and I want to let you know that the Charter Commission unanimously turned this recommendation down, but it's on the local law, so.
Chair Bartels?
Let me start by thanking Dave and everyone on that commission for that service, because it was a lot of work. I attended a bunch of the meetings, and I appreciate all that everyone did. It was basically a year's worth of work, right? It was a long time. This change was adopted unanimously by this change to bring it back to this to bring it to this language was adopted unanimously by this committee. The thinking behind it was in part, which I articulated at the time, and I know the executive asked for the same change. The executive requested of the commission that a similar change be put in. And the thinking was not to limit the executive to the three recommendations of this planning board. We are lucky to have had such long-serving planners, and I don't want to jinx anything, but I don't think our current planner is going to, we know he's not going to be here forever. So I know that that concern was expressed about really limiting that pool to the three nominees. I think that in terms of the relationship between the planning director and the planning board, that remains the same. Like, that's in the charter, and there's all kinds of duties of the planning board and interconnectedness that still would exist. It's just this one aspect of limiting the pool was a cause of concern enough that everyone on this committee, you actually felt both legislators, minority and majority leader, Hepner, majority leader Hepner, minority leader Ronk aren't here today, but both of them felt very strongly about this and you know, spoke on the record very in strong support of
now,
this.
Now, is this
change.
Going to go before the voters?
This won't go before the voters, no. The other one, there's two resolutions in here. Is this the one that goes before the voters? One, I think this is not the one that goes before the voters. The other one goes before the voters.
But that's initiating all these changes.
We have two proposals. One is local law number 16. That gets that does not go before the voters. And then local law number, what's the other one? 17 will go before the voters next November.
And that would include this?
No. 17 includes all the things that have to go before the voters.
All right, so this one doesn't have to go before
the voters. No. And then this is, the ones that don't have to go before the voters get approved just by the legislature. Similar to what we did last time. I mean, that's what we did last time as well.
Well, I guess one last word, and I think it doesn't limit the people that are going to be chosen because the planning board you know, has to interview every one of them. So anybody that, even if the executive wanted them interviewed, they'd be interviewed by the planning board. And these are the people that do this stuff all the time. And I really think it is small d democracy that you're taking away. And I'm not sure that the executive needs more power. You know, so I really think, like, in fact, we probably should choose more people in a way that, in this way. It opens it up to more people to be able to actually be interviewed. Because the planning board isn't going to look at it from a political point of view whatsoever. They're going to be looking at it from their from their town view and the and planning view. So I think you're actually doing the opposite. You're lessening the choices.
Sure, Bartow.
You're not going to do that. You're going to have executives going to say, this is my person. They'll be the one that they interview, whoever they interview, that's going to be whoever they wanted, whoever their buddy was. It could be their buddy, it could be their campaign manager, as long as they fit the qualifications, whatever it would be. My problem is, again, this is small d democracy, and you really shouldn't be throwing it out.
Yeah, again,
go ahead, sure.
Thank you. Again, I appreciate the sentiment, but I don't think the pool is limited by allowing. I actually think the pool is expanded. The executive, I would expect, as in other positions, to do a national search with a robust for any major role, but especially for this role, with a robust interview process. And I also actually would expect that if the planning board had strong recommendations from within, and I don't mean from within the planning board, but just from within their ranks of candidates that they were aware of, those would also be forwarded to the submission process that's normally undertaken. It's similar to any of our boards or any of our positions. When something's widely publicized, anyone can apply, and certainly any one of us can say, here's another candidate to add to that pool. So this by necessity limits the pool to 3 recommended by the planning board. If the executive found someone that they thought was amazing and it was not recommended by the planning board, that person is not and cannot be a candidate. Full stop. Cannot be a candidate. They found the best person in the entire universe, not recommended by the planning board.
Why would they put them forward? You're telling me that this person comes forward and the executive says interview them and they're going to say, oh no, they're no good?
They could.
I mean, that doesn't make sense.
But they could. The point is that they limit the pool to their 3. And that's the problem. That's really the problem that I see.
Legislator Erner and then Mr. Hewitt.
I just want to agree with my predecessor here.
Is that a first?
I think we can probably agree on many things.
There you go.
You mentioned that the executive branch had a similar idea for the change. Who had the idea first?
I don't know.
In the legislative department, whose idea was it?
I definitely brought it to the commission, but I also brought it after discussing with both majority and minority leader. So I brought it in the packet. I represented everything as my idea, but I told the commission when there was consensus from the majority and minority leader, which I did tell them that.
So was it a coincidence that the executive had the same idea?
I expect so, because I didn't see the executive's list. Sometimes when I was there presenting, the executive team was there, sometimes not. Sometimes the comptroller was there, sometimes not. The comptroller was always there, but sometimes she was presenting, sometimes she wasn't. So I didn't know until I was there that was also on their list.
Just to add one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
I agree with Mr. Donaldson that this creates a more democratic process by people who are actually experienced in planning instead of just picking a selection. And I think a great person who's the best in the universe would go through this democratic process, as you mentioned.
Mr. Guerrero.
So I'm going to be in opposition to what was just said, because I think this actually, you have a county planning board that is made up of unelected individuals that are appointed by the towns. Of course, this is probably worst case scenario, but listen, we've seen worst case scenarios for those who've been doing this a while. You could have one party as the exec, you could have a majority of the planning board be the opposite party, and just to hold them up or to put in somebody that they want to, you pick 2 candidates that are terrible, one that they want to see as the real person that they want to see chosen, and you say, here, exec, these are the 3 people. Completely not the person the exec would choose. And then we're acting as if the exec has the sole appointment. No, it's confirmation by the legislature. 23 individually elected people who have to ratify what the choice of the exec is. I think this is actually the most democratic way to do this. These are elected people for a countywide position, and the director of planning, I don't know if it's the position or the person, but I can just tell you my experience over the last 19 years with Planner Doyle, that position or person holds a lot of power. They yield a lot of power with things that go on in this county, and I would hate to see that be politicized by a board that is not duly elected.
Former Chairman Donaldson.
Well, if every one of these people that are on the planning board were elected there by their town and their village, they are, in a sense, elected by their town or their village.
No.
I mean, you're bringing a worst-case scenario, but you can have a lot more worst-case scenarios the way it's set up, the way you want to set it up. I mean, we've had, take a look at the executive when the last time we had a problem with the executive when they wanted to hire a new public defender that had no experience in a trial. Never did a trial. And it was hard to turn that down. We had to, it took us, I mean, we really had to battle to do this top deck. But we had to have a two-thirds vote to stop it. And, we put, Executive Ryan put forth somebody, as you know, was not really qualified for the job because they never, ever set foot in a jury. They never had a jury trial. They never did any kind of civil trials even. The only thing they did was housing stuff. And they were going to be the public defender. And that would have been horrendous for the, for the community that, people that are depending on public defenders. And we fought that, and we ended up actually turning that appointment down. Turning an appointment down by the executive is not an easy task. It's just not an easy task when people don't want to do it. And that was a tough task. We did. That's the way I look at it. You do what you got to do. But I think it is really taking small d democracy out of this, and I think we need more of that, not less of it.
If I could just finish up here, I do appreciate the work that your commission has done, and I don't always agree with what you guys do over the years, but I do respect that. And I also respect the work of this committee who spent a lot of time making the changes. And I don't think they're going to change their mind on what you had said today. But there are three more chances to talk about this. There's going to be a public hearing. We also got to approve it again in this committee after the public hearing, and then it has to go to the floor. So there is more chances, Dave, for you and the rest of the commission. I know one of the members of the planning board had reached out to me and was opposed to this change. And so there are more opportunities to have your voices heard, and I guess that would be a democracy with a large D. So
when is that?
Jay, help me out. When's this public hearing on
6/6/25. I would respectfully request the committee amend that to 6 p.m. when you're ready.
What day was that again?
December the 6th. It's a Wednesday, the night of the budget vote.
And if you're not going to be around, Dave, you could...
Just that one? Cause,
I have a number of them when you get there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. So you could send your comments in writing to the clerk.
We want to travel.
Appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you, Dave.
Well, we'll have the call in the studio, right?
So you need to make an amendment to
6 p.m., please.
I'll make the
motion. And I will make that. I'll second that.
On the amendment?
Aye.
On 674 itself. Did we move this?
You guys did.
Okay.
You did.
We did.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Aye.
Going back to number 4, I believe.
4. Correct.
No, yeah, number
462. That's adopting proposed local law number 12. We postponed this a few times. Legislator Erner, you got anything to add?
So, I'll make the motion to discuss.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Second on motion.
Thank you. Floor is yours.
So you see an amendment in the title. This is just that technical amendment. It's somewhere in the body where the name Mahiff County, Kentucky is struck. This was advice of some of the public who had brought this to us originally after they spoke with the Stockbridge Muncie, who asked that we not use that name as an alternative present-day name, but we can use it for historical purposes only. So I would ask that you adopt that amendment, and then just yesterday I was presented with an opinion from the county attorney about this law, and so wanting to take that into consideration, I would ask one more time that you either take no action or postpone it, and hopefully we can finally have a vote in December.
Chair Bartels.
I'll move to amend to remove the word also and replace it with formerly, both in the title and in the body of the.
Any discussion on the amendment? All in favor?
Aye.
Amendment passed. What action do you want to take with 462, postponement or no action? I don't think we're going to take any action. We'll see you next month. But you do have more on the agenda?
Yes.
Okay. 553, establishing a policy compelling the distribution and publication of terms of settlement when actions involving Ulster County are settled.
That's Maloney.
That's Legislator Maloney. He's not here. He hasn't spoken to me on what his pleasure will be. So do you want to entertain a motion to postpone it?
Motion to postpone. Second.
All in favor of postponement?
Aye.
Thank you. Chair. Manna.
Yes, if I may, I just want to go back and commend the process for the resolution about the Hudson River. It's been a very iterative process, and we have a jurisprudence that is very anthropocentric, if that's the right word, and we live on a planet with many other species, plant and animal, and I think it's time to take even the smallest step to include that awareness in the jurisprudence. So I just want to really say how high regard I have for the iterative process that has brought us to this point. That's all.
And that was on 462?
I wanted to add that to the
record. Thank you. We are going to be talking about it next month.
Yeah.
Sure.
Can I just, for the record, add my vote in the affirmative on 652, 653, and 654? I was out of the room. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're on 596, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 13 to establish an Office of Housing Council. That's Legislator Earners.
Did I sign in 10 spot on those?
Motion for discussion. I'll second.
Second that?
Yes.
Discussion. I'll give it to you, Phil.
Thank you, Chair. So,
did I do it right?
There's a lot to say about why I believe we need this law. Of course, this would set a public hearing about, and we would hear about that at the hearing. My timing was poor last month. I had scheduled a discussion with some of the nonprofit legal service providers in our county for the day after last committee meeting. So I guess it's time for me to share with you what I learned from them. But at the risk of speaking for them, this is a letter from the Hudson Valley Justice Center in support of us doing this. Hudson Valley Justice Center recently opened a Poughkeepsie location, which they anticipate could serve the nearest parts of our county from that office. I think before this, they hadn't been doing any litigation in our county. A lot of their representation focuses around folks who don't qualify for services based on immigration status and other things that Hudson Valley Legal Services, for example, can't represent. So I had that day after the last committee, I had spoken with them. I spoke with Legal Services of the Hudson Valley, who said that this is awesome, this type of thing. As folks probably know, that they currently do represent clients who are tenants facing eviction throughout our county right now. I've been to cases that they litigated in Kingston. I've been to cases they litigated in Plague Hill. And so they currently are the service provider in Ulster County and have been for some time. That said, they're headquartered in Westchester County, and Westchester County has just done what we contemplate doing here, only we go a step farther, and I'll get to that in a minute. So I asked them the question, okay, both of you legal service providers, nonprofits, do tenant representation. You both are headquartered in Westchester. Why did you support Westchester creating this separate office? Doesn't that just duplicate what you do? They said, absolutely not. They said their office is never going to be able to serve all the need, and they gave me a whole litany of reasons, some of which I can share with you. But it ranges from conflicts of interest to different contracts covering different tenants, and then they are, different types of situations, not just for tenants, but if we're talking about tenants, like, do we have to cover just seniors or just low-income people or just veterans? I think gave all three of those as examples, and there's even some federal and state laws that tell them you have to prioritize these types of clients, and one of those is expiring. But the difference is, by us creating this office, we would eliminate that, and the only categories remaining that would determine whether you get represented are a straight-up income requirement that the law contemplates setting at 300% of federal poverty or 60% of AMI, whichever's higher. That lines up with what the public defender has to, the folks they have to represent. If the 60 we increased to 80, then that would line up with the existing contract that we have with ARPA for 1 year to do legal defense services through Legal Services of the Hudson Valley. Now, how many folks are we talking about? Who's getting sued for eviction in Ulster County? So Amber produced a great chart from us based off the New York State Court Administration's database, which Counsel Ragucci, as a sitting judge in our county, says is certainly an underestimate. I've actually asked Clerk Fabella to send a letter. This was at the advice of the public defender to the Magistrates Association. And actually, Chris Ragucci said he could do this more quickly because he's a judge. But to find out about the cases we don't know about. Be that as it may, we can take as a minimum that in between 2019 and 2022, the numbers of evictions were 700 filed in Ulster County, were 773, 252, 303. Remember, in those last 2 years, 2020 and 2021, there was actually a moratorium on most evictions for reasons of non-payment and some other things. So perhaps landlords weren't filing as many because they knew that that would get delayed. Then the number ballooned last year up to 938, and then this year, as of September 25th, it was 695, for an average, for what that's worth, of 592 for the 4 3/4 years. Our legal services contract anticipates serving 75 clients in 12 months. The upper end of what it's expected that an attorney could handle is about 100. The office that we contemplate setting up, the head of that office would have a choice how to set it up. They could decide, we're going to litigate all this stuff ourselves. Then, of course, they would have to bring in more staff. Or they could say, we're going to contract this out. We did a sort of hybrid budget assumption for this, where we would have the head of the office, a second attorney, each of whom could litigate if they chose for 75 to 100 clients. And then we have a $230,000 budget for the outside contracts. So, not coincidentally, that's approximately the amount that our contract is for the next year to serve clients through legal services. That does not guarantee that everyone will get represented who needs it. That just gave them another lawyer And a paralegal and a half-time staffer, from what I recall from that contract. So there's an organization called Stout, which has studied extensively the cost of evictions around the country, and Westchester actually contracted with them to determine what their cost savings would be to enact what they were attempting to do. So let me speak for a minute about the difference between what Westchester did and what we're proposing. In Westchester, their office is solely a referral agency. Now, that's really important still, because that way the people of Westchester County know that they can call up this office, which they put in their social services, if they're facing not actually just an eviction, but any number of housing-related issues that tenants face. And then they'll get one consultation no matter their income, if they're facing this issue and they're a tenant. And then if they are income qualified at the levels I mentioned before, then they would get full representation, which in practice would look like referring out to legal services, referring out to this justice center, referring out to other firms in the county of Westchester that would then represent them. For us, on a similar budget, we're actually going to be able to litigate if the head of the office so chose. And the reason that's important is there's a dearth, a severe dearth of housing attorneys in our county and in our area. You know, Westchester's got a lot of attorneys. We have far fewer, especially those who serve housing. Just looking in the city of Kingston, for example, on a recent day that I checked the whole calendar that was up there, the state, as you might know, maintains the docket for the city courts, but they don't for the town and village justice courts. So you can go in and see what's going on in Kingston Housing Court a lot more easily than in the other courts. You'd have to call them up and work with their clerk and stuff. That said, I fully intend to do that to the extent that we need to have a very accurate picture of what this all entails. But be that as it may, legal services represented about half the tenants on that whole calendar of 2 months, and then the others were all represented by various private attorneys throughout the area, none of whom listed housing as an area of their expertise. One example is O'Connor and Partners. They have a lot of different areas that they list as they're expert in, maybe a dozen and a half, but they didn't list landlord-tenant. You know who is experienced in litigating landlord-tenant, though, is our public defender. Now, that's only important because she would actually be the department head and oversee this office in the way that we've proposed setting it up. Her role would not, though, be as the day-to-day. It would mainly be to help them with the budget and be the liaison to us, although I suspect the legislature would want to hear from this office head as well. I know I've been a little all over the place with my presentation, but I can continue or I can pause at this point for questions.
Chair Bartels wants to ask you a question or make a comment.
Thanks. Thank you for all the work you've done on this. I was wondering, and I know Legislator Guevara said he brought it up last time, and I asked yesterday, and I don't expect if yesterday was the first time you heard it that you would have gotten it by then, but I would very much like to see, and Deputy Executive Contreras said you would endeavor to get it for us, some kind of report out. You sent it out?
Today?
Yeah. Okay.
And the ARPA committee has had it, but it's a regular report from.
And does it say how many people, does it speak to how many people wanted service that were not served?
I don't know if it speaks to that.
Because I feel like that's something that would be really.
She's not here today. Yet.
Oh, she's not here today.
No.
So I would be really interested to know through that ARPA contract how many people were able to get representation. I would also be interested actually to know the outcome of that representation, which I think should be in any reporting, not specific to a name. It can remain confidential, but I think we'd want to know the outcome of that. And then I think it's really important to know how many people were denied or didn't, there wasn't the capacity to serve. And certainly there, as you said, there the need exists. We know because of how many people are getting evicted, but a straight number doesn't tell us whether or not they would be eligible, or whether or not they would seek that counsel. I mean, I assume most people who are being evicted want to stay, but maybe there could be a whole set of circumstances which would put them outside of eligibility for this, and or potentially wanting. So I would like to get a handle on the big picture. I also, I mean, I do think it's a very solid idea. What I understand is that the executive's office is asking to wait to see the outcome of Westchester's program, which was just instituted recently, but you're also saying that that's different, that has some significant differences than what we're proposing here. You know, I think it is going to be a matter in part of, you know, cost and competing priorities. I haven't yet seen all that's coming with budget amendments. I mean, this is coming at a time that it's essentially going to have to come as a budget amendment. That's one of the problems, is if we pass the law, then it almost necessitates we pass the budget amendment, because we're passing a law that requires the budget amendment, but we haven't yet seen the breadth of what all the budget amendments are, and whether or not we can approve all or some, like what the legislative will is. So that's my one hesitation. It's almost like I want to see the approval of the amendment before the law, unless there's the real sense that the passage of the law is going to necessitate the passage of the amendment, as long as we understand that.
John?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think if one of the points that Legislator Erner made was that the Westchester Department is mostly referral, I think that's really interesting, because that is a lot of what the new unit that we proposed could do. There's a housing specialist. They can and should make all of those referrals. There's a special assistant to the commissioner specifically for housing. That person can and should make those referrals. So, I mean, that's a big part of what their duties can be. Is they're supposed to be the group that catches people who are either in emergency housing or who are facing housing insecurity and maybe needing to enter emergency housing. They go to that group, and the group, the idea is that they do whatever it takes to help them, that they're not constrained, because currently DSS has a lot of titles that are very, they have very specific duties that they can perform according to the federal regulations and the funding sources. But this group of people are going to be very flexible. So that's one piece. And then the other point that I made in caucus last night was that there is a shortage of attorneys. So we have a really hard time finding attorneys. We have a hard time finding attorneys for our county attorney's office. We also have put out RFPs for attorneys for various purposes, health department, enforcement, assigned counsel. We have a hard time finding attorneys. So that's another reason we would be very concerned with adding more headcount that we may possibly not be able to fill. And also, right before we're taking on a big salary study, we don't know what the implications of that are. Just wanted to make those points that I hadn't made previously.
Thank you. Legislator Gavaris?
Yes, they brought up the caucus, please again, weren't there, you know, geographically diverse coverage is a flaw in this current proposal. I know this would certainly help your district, which there are, and those to the north here, but it certainly does not help Platic Hill nor Worthing, or Saugerties. I guess Poughkeepsie is kind of far from the Saugerties, too. So I think that's a limitation. I think the idea of we don't know what the need actually is one of my biggest hesitations to all this. What was the 411, 311, 2013? What is the program that the constituent services
that? I mean, we called it 311, but it wasn't really 311.
So that's one of those things that, again, we did a program because we thought this great need was out there. We ramped up this whole department, and we did all this expense, and then how 75 quotes for the year or some ridiculous number that I'm not sure it wasn't 75, but it was not that far off from that. It was a very low number. It didn't do what it was going to accomplish. Instead of ramping up and starting with their existing staff or existing department and trying to work into what the need actually is, this calls to actually start at the highest point and sort of work down. The other comment that we did not make tonight, Legislative Center, but you made, I think, at caucus, and you may have made it elsewhere, was this would save with safety net. I did speak with Amber, and that assumes or presupposes that every represented tenant would then not be evicted if they had that attorney. And that's just simply not true and not the case. Some people, despite the best representation in the world, would still be evicted, especially if they're non-payment or whatever the circumstances may be. Without knowing the spread of the cases themselves, again, it's hard to know what we're actually talking about, a true need is. And then if this is based on income, I would also just remind everybody that this is not a one or two or column A, column B kind of thing. There are landlords who are considered low income, especially seniors. I know of several in Ellenville who that was their retirement plan. They are a two-family house. They live in one. They're getting the income from the rental next door. They are considered low income. I know at least five off the top of my head that are considered low income. If you're talking about 60% of AMI, they are absolutely considered low income and they would qualify. Does this account for their representation for through services like that? And I guess through the chair to Sarah or that question.
You're on the spot.
Sorry. That's fine. No, this is about tenants. It's not about landlords.
Go ahead, Sarah. Sorry to interrupt.
One thing that this has got me thinking about, I don't mean to take us down another avenue, and I know I won't be here next year, but just to put the thought in the minds of the people who will be here next year, is that I do think any way we can help in terms of this assistance, making sure people have representation, is great, but I'm wondering about programming that would provide rental assistance, like bridge assistance. Like, there must be models of programs, because really it comes down to not paying the rent very often. And like Legislator Guevara just said, you know, these can be complex situations. I know that I was aware of one eviction where was something, there were, you know, nine months or 10 months or 15 months in arrears. It becomes really hard for the landlord, independent potentially of their income, to maintain a home that they're not, that home could have a mortgage on it. It could have all kinds of encumbrances that, you know, they could be using that rent to offset the expenses to get through, and a year of no rent puts a burden on them as well. And I'm not comparing the difficulty of one versus the other. I'm saying that in the instance of helping to provide rent to the tenant, to be able to provide that rent to the landlord, that keeps the tenant in the building without even having to go to court. So I'm sure there are model programs. I see Deputy Executive Contreras, and maybe we could think about it. If we have something already, maybe we could think about expanding that.
So two things. There's a state-funded program around $400,000 that you all recently approved, I think 2 months ago, and is administered by Catholic Charities. They have five people who are working through it now, so it's available. We're also helping the research per Legislator Stewart's proposal, a similar idea that you just described, but basically bridge rental program.
Mm-hmm.
To build off of that, there was a program that was ran during COVID by the planning department, and it ended up helping about 65 people of that same criteria, and just kind of looking if there's a way to feasibly put a program like that together.
That's great.
Thank you. Go ahead, Phil.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So I'd like to respond to what's been said. Thank you all. I'd like to start by asking through the chair to the administration, will this new housing homelessness unit have attorneys who can represent tenants?
No, they're not going to be attorneys. I was just making that comment because you said that the Westchester model did a lot of referring, which these folks can definitely do, but they're not going to be attorneys.
Okay, thank you.
Or at least they won't be in an attorney title.
So, let's see here. I can follow my notes in a spiral around this piece of paper. Outcomes, who is denied? Well, so let's take a look here. This year, the first 9 months of the year, so three quarters of the year, Kingston zip code, which includes several towns, not just the city of Kingston, there was 244 filings. Accord, I'm going to name all the places that had at least 20 filings of evictions for the year so far. County zip codes. Accord, 23. Ellenville, 74. Kerhonkson, 25. Saugerties, 50. Highland, 43. New Paltz, 43. Plattekill, 23. And Wallkill, 42. And just about every other zip code had at least one. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing that report about who we have served. The budget is, I do have a budget amendment prepared actually for this office, and I'm glad that Legislator Guevara's talked to Amber, because that's who prepared that amendment. So on that, we're the decrease in safety net assumed to be $378,000. That would be about, so for one person to stay in emergency housing for a month, it's roughly $3,000 in a motel, roughly. So that'd be like 130 tenants, we could say, for 1 month, or just 11 tenants for a whole year. So even if we just managed to keep 11 tenants from losing their housing in all of Ulster County for a year, and we know that the average time that a household is spending in emergency housing is now 20 months, that pays that chunk of it. That pays 60% of this. Now, I've heard the legal services agencies argue that this actually is in the interest of landlords who might be able to settle the case, because if you go to court and say, hey, judge, I don't have a lawyer, I'm going to try and get one. Okay, we can delay this for 2 weeks. I still didn't get it. All right, well, then this, that, and the other thing. Most tenants end up going pro se in this state and country. It's like less than 10% end up going with a lawyer. More than 80% of landlords have a lawyer. But that delay can end up slowing down the resolution of a case. Ultimately, no one really wants to be dragging out a housing case, landlord or tenant, in my experience. But be that as it may. A little bit more about the differences between us and Westchester. I think that we're going for similar outcomes, just a different way of enacting it. Here, because we don't have lawyers, we're putting a fairly high salary. We heard that at least last night in caucus, 110 for the office head. Their second would be around 80K, but that's, you know, if that needed to be raised, that's a separate conversation, I think, about all the attorneys being paid, needing to be paid more to fill the offices that we need to fill in this county. But I think we put it at the level that's needed in order to attract the person to do it. But I don't know that we can just ask the private sector to bring in attorneys if they're not doing it right now, housing attorneys. So the difference, again, is that we would have two attorneys this contemplates who could litigate potentially for up to 200 tenants in a year. So I don't know. I mean, I'm asking for a public hearing now. The budget amendment will, I'll be presenting that before the public hearing would happen. The public hearing would happen the night of the budget session. So, you know, I'm hoping that we give the public a chance to air on this. We had the report from Pattern for Progress, and I feel for anybody who's low income in this world right now, in this state, in this county, whatever else their circumstances. Patterns for Progress reported on the AMI, though, of tenants versus landlords in the county, and we all know that tenants make less money, but we can go back and look at how much less. I think the AMI is maybe in the 40s for tenants. The AMI of the county on the whole is in the 70s. I appreciate Catholic Charities having been brought up. $500,000, I talked to somebody today who got funded through that to help pay some gap in their rent. And unfortunately, they're going to need more than that. But, you know, let's fund that too. Let's keep people from losing their homes. That's what this is about. I don't think it's a really big investment to ask. It shows a commitment to the people of our county that this is a priority, and we believe, at least in fairness, it's not seen as a right to have housing in this state, but we could at least make it a right to have an attorney, because something that's so fundamental is housing being at risk. I think you should have that. The last thing about geographic diversity and coverage, you might have read, I hadn't known until I saw it in the paper, but the city of Kingston recently just announced a contract with Legal Services to represent just city tenants in various housing matters. I think I still have to talk to the city housing planner, but it's seeming like it'll be substantially similar to what this would cover. So maybe that actually lessens the burden for the county if we can have this not over, like, do what the city's contract is doing, but just complement it instead. The city announced $500,000 to Legal Services, but when I asked Legal Services, they said they're actually only getting $150K of that, so I have to figure out where the rest of that's going. I'm hoping that, you know, the Poughkeepsie office of the Justice Center is just an example. Again, these multiple legal firms that do housing representation have told me about their difficulty in running around from court to court, and especially in rural areas of our county where there might not be much cell service, so they can't do their other work while they're waiting for the docket to come around. This office would be responsible, in fact, for the whole of the county, so it wouldn't discriminate based on what part of the county you're in. You wouldn't come to Kingston. The attorney would come to your town, to your court, to your house, to wherever they need to go to represent you. So I actually think that's the best case scenario if we're promising equal access around the county with this office. So thank you.
I'm going to let Legislator Gavaris, Chair Bartels, I got a few comments, and then we can make a decision what we're going to do tonight with this resolution.
I was just going to make a comment about the budget amendment and the necessity versus non-necessity of doing it, just so I'm sure you know, but I'll just anyway, the money for that, more than likely, unless we had enough votes to do it, it's not going to come out of taxes, it's going to come out of fund balance, and that could be done now, or it could be done if this was approved, so it won't matter. The money sort of is there, it's just a matter of whether it's formally in a line or it's in the fund balance. Despite my appetite to actually raise the slight increase, I don't think there's enough support to do that. So, but I just don't. I wouldn't be so concerned about the appropriation of that money. The money is technically there if this does pass and get approved.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Bartels.
Thank you. And I was also going to make just a friendly suggestion. Should this move forward, and should you, I know you are going to be bringing forward a budget amendment. I'm not sure why you're contemplating the lease. I don't know the thinking behind that. I don't know if it's living, if there isn't the room for these people at the public defender's office or somewhere else in the county physically. Like I think given that we're doing a space study, contemplating a lease is a little bit problematic. But what isn't contemplated in here, which I think would be absolutely critical to its success, should it move forward, is advertisement. actually spending money, which I don't know that we always do so well, spending money on getting the word out that this program exists. I mean, I can tell you, now it's probably 5 or 6 years ago, I happened to be at a meeting, and Office for the Aging was at the table. I was in this room as a legislator, and they were going over a bunch of programs that they had. At the time, I was the primary caregiver and healthcare proxy for my aging father-in-law. I had not a clue about one of the amazing programs. I had not a clue about one of the programs, and I was a sitting legislator. So it just goes to show that, I mean, this especially is going to be about, to the geographic diversity point, is going to be about getting the word out that this service exists. And that you can avail yourself of it if you're eligible, and you can call wherever to find out if you are eligible, should it move. And I think that's even more important than the lease.
Thank you, Chair. Normally, I would be against any expansion of our government, but I do think this is a well-written, and I think there is a future for it. There, you know, Legislator Guevara's brought up the, you know, there needs to be some kind of representation in the South and out West, not just the Kingston office. I don't think that's going to work, somebody driving around, you know, having a lawyer drive around from town to town. I mean,
house calls.
Yeah, right. I think, you know, maybe to limit this, non-payment of rent should be a non-starter. I mean, how could you defend a non-payment of rent because somebody didn't fix a light bulb? You know, that should be a non-starter in my book. And I know most government programs seem to have a life of their own after they're started, but it should be, I don't think it's going to start January 1st, even if it passed today. It's probably going to happen in mid-June, July. You know, so that your numbers would be probably cut in half.
Yeah.
But there should be some kind of sunset to it, you know, have it passed again in maybe 2 years to see if you're, or maybe even expand it, you know, to see if your program works. Postpone, you want to vote for a public hearing?
I just think we still don't have information enough to even, because I mean, still just, I don't think we fully have the picture here to even know what we're presenting to the public, because I think, again, I'll reiterate, I don't think this needs to be a county department, and I think what Deputy Contreras said was that if listener mentioned that the office themselves would decide whether they would be the people to litigate these cases or they would refer it. Well, if it does, if they're not going to litigate it, then why do they need to be attorneys? Again, I say if we have something starting and we can ramp up as the need is there, then that's what we should do. Roll out from starting in steps. And I don't know that that can be presented if we don't know what the real need is. We don't know the numbers yet. It's hard to present to the public a full picture, and that's the concern I have, is we present something to the public, but it's only half the story, unfortunately.
Chair?
You know, I'm conflicted, because I hear the argument from the executive's office about the wait and see, and the new initiative that's proposed in the budget and how that intersects with this. And I also feel like I do need more information in terms of what you sent out but I didn't get to see today, but also what's probably not on there, which is what's not covered. But that said, I mean, we all know there's need. I think the comments about non-payment, unfortunately, I would suspect, I have no idea what the numbers are, but I would suspect that if not a majority, a very significant portion of evictions are due to non-payment. And That said, Legislator Erner's point about how keeping people in their homes, which can't be done for infinity, if they're just not if they're not paying or they can't pay, but keeping people in their homes has less of a negative impact, not just on their emotional and physical well-being, but on the financial cost to the county in terms of services, et cetera. I mean, housing first is a concept, really, that begins with the thought that you can't really deal with any of these other problems if you don't have a stable home, a stable roof over your head, whether it's mental health problems or drug problems and any number of issues. So my struggle is that, like Legislator Erner, I'm not going to be in office much longer, but there's a lot of good here. So I don't know. I mean, I'd like to know what Legislator Levine thinks in terms of moving to the public hearing to hear. I don't know, because we're really at a point where if we don't move it forward today, the public hearing wouldn't go until
January.
Yeah, and in January you'd actually have to you could have a special meeting and have a public hearing on December 18th, but then it's a whole new body. I don't even know. We generally don't.
I don't know how we do it. Whatever
January, yeah.
Comes back, I think there's still going to be a lot of tweaking involved.
I think Chairman Tozer sort of brought up a point that I've been making for over a year now, and I've had this conversation with Legislator Erner before, is that it needs to be a comprehensive approach to solve the problem. And it's not just housing, it's not just addiction, it's not just any of these one thing. There are multiple factors as to why somebody either is housing insecure, food insecure. I would support anything that does a comprehensive approach to resolving problems. But one-offs like this is where I have a struggle with, and I think this is a one-off. This is not a comprehensive plan, and that's what it addresses one part of the problem. I'm going to be a no tonight if it's actually pushing.
Well, I need a motion for a public hearing or a postponement.
I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this and get a lot of feedback on this. I sympathize very much with the idea of what Legislator Erner is trying to accomplish with this resolution, but I do share some concerns from Legislator Caveras and somewhat of the chair and the executive saying that they think that it's not ready to kind of go before the public for December 6th for a public hearing. I don't think maybe I'm being optimistic in terms of that. Obviously the resolution is on file. Just because a new legislature is coming in January doesn't mean that this idea is going to die. I mean, it can be. The ball can be picked up by another legislator and continued in terms of tweaking with this and seeing where amendments or where changes might be made to make this more feasible and ready to be discussed in a public hearing. But I think it's probably at this point, I don't think it's ready for a public hearing at this point for December 6th. So I don't think I can vote for it tonight. To go to public hearing.
Go ahead.
I just want to start off by saying I think Legislator Erner made a lot of really, really great points. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really great conversation, and I appreciate all the work that you did on this. I want to make a point because there was the mention of the fund balance earlier, because this is something that we have to pay attention to. The budget that we propose has 20% of the general operating budget in a rainy day fund. I know there are a lot of amendments that are going to be put forth. So I just think we should keep that in mind. Anything, any of the amendments that go through are going to be coming out of the rainy day fund, and that is something to be very, very mindful of.
Motion to postpone 1 month.
Second.
Second.
On the postponement, Legislator Erner, you have your hand up.
Yeah. I'd ask that you just take the vote. If it goes down, it goes down, but this can't happen while I'm still in office, and I'd like to at least just, y'all can vote how you're going to vote, but...
You want a vote on the
public
hearing?
I'd like an up or down vote, yeah.
I've always been a proponent that if a legislator is here wanting to vote, we should give it to him.
Motion for
postponement.
Withdrawn. Fair enough. Do I have a motion to for the public hearing? We don't have to do it. All in favor of the public hearing?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Opposed. Motion fails.
Thank you.
Actually, I'm going to change my vote to a yes on that. I'm for Legislator Erner, I am going to change it to a yes.
Now that's a team player right there.
Just, coming to think about it, I at the very least, I think the public should eventually have comment on this, and for Legislator Erner before he leaves office, I think he deserves to be able to get the public comment on it. So I will give that to him.
You know, I didn't think it would pass. I'm gonna change my vote to it now. I'm only kidding.
What's behind door number two?
Okay, moving along to 610, and that's another proposed local law number 10, extending the participation of New York State Hunt and Pilot Program for 12, 13-year-olds. Second?
I will second that for the young hunters.
Any discussion?
Just want to confirm, I did ask if you put me as a sponsor.
Discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Number 672, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 14. This is a change in amending the charter to create a preamble and to ensure more diverse advisory boards. You're making a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Second? Chair?
Yeah, so I'm not ready to move this one tonight. I want to first say that the preamble, I really appreciate, actually, and so much so that I feel like I need to sit with it a little longer, but it's in moments, it feels like poetry to me that makes me really have to think in the most highest of compliment to you. Like, I think it's beautiful, but I'm not ready. The geographic diversity is actually really problematic, because it says all appointments shall include representation from all geographic areas. And the first problem is it doesn't define what a geographic area is, that I'm aware of. And the second problem is, as someone who in the last 2 years, I don't know, I'd have to check with Lori, I feel like I've maybe made close to 100 appointments trying to get these boards up to speed. It's really challenging. It's really challenging. You know, you could have a board where nobody applies, and then a board where 15 people from Ellenville apply, and no one from anywhere else applies, and or two people from one place, and they're not qualified, and it's actually functionally impossible to achieve this, and so I don't think we can pass a charter amendment that we can't reasonably achieve. But I like the spirit of it, and I think especially, I mean, at this table, you basically have three representatives from portions of the county who are regularly underrepresented, not just on boards, but who often feel left out, right? The southern end of the county and on both in the east and the west. You're seeing a lot of nods. So I certainly appreciate the sentiment, but I don't think we can, I don't think we can legislate it this way.
Any other comments? Go ahead.
I pretty much want to just reiterate exactly what the chair said in terms of, I think limiting for board appointments with, you know, this geographic diversity requirement is going to make it very complicated to make sure that we get enough folks on some of these boards and commissions where it's already like pulling teeth to get people to serve. So I share those concerns that the chair just brought up, and I thank her for bringing that up to the committee's attention. So
second on that postponement?
I'll make that second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Did you want to speak? I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Do you have to make a motion to reconsider?
I don't think we have to, but we'll let him speak.
Yeah. I'm not going to try to convince you other than what you're going to do. I just want, thank you for that feedback. I would, as I said when I first mentioned this, I don't remember, it might have been the meeting last. It was the meeting where you were going through all the different stuff from the Charter Revision Commission. You know, this preamble is an idea. It's one person, and I would love to see, you know, a larger group of folks work on something like that. It doesn't have to look like this in the end, but that was my offering for that. As far as the geographic, I get that. I'm happy that this committee has worked on a definition for geographic diversity, and hopefully that can be incorporated into some, at least where appropriate, in the future on other boards and commissions.
Thank you.
Duly noted.
We're going to move on to 673. We're going to set a vote
on the postponement.
I thought we voted already.
We did.
Aye.
Aye.
Oh, I thought you did.
Yes.
Aye.
Is that what? I know we just did it, but is that what Legislator Erner wanted? Postponement is
that's
sort of
fine. That's fine.
It's fine? Okay, because it's kind of functionally.
Yeah.
Okay. 673, another public hearing. Do I hear two motions?
I'm with
673.
673? Yeah.
Second.
Do we have discussion on the periodic compensation review committee? Go ahead.
Thank you. So I'm sorry that this as presented is not legal, actually. I failed to ask that A be removed. A is not legal. A1 is legal, however, if we amend out the adjusted for family size part.
Wait, where are we?
We are on
Section 2, I'm sorry.
Local Law 15.
Section 2A. So picking from option A or A1, there's no choice because A is not legal. So it would just be A1. And then and not adjusted for family size. That's also, I believe, not legal. Apologies that I didn't change that. I would note, though, that since this mentions area median income, that it would have to get adjusted each year. I'm not sure whether that would happen automatically or whether that needs to be included in the language here. And then as far as B, that's actually not needed. That can be struck because A1 tells us what would happen to the legislators' salaries. So it's really just about would you like to abolish the periodic compensation review committee and instead fix the salaries as I specify. And now I'll make the let me pause there, and that's that, so you can see what the what it's actually proposing, and then I can take your questions about that part before we move to the next.
Sure.
So I'm not prepared to make that move tonight. Like, that's something that I feel like needs a lot of conversation. Like, and I appreciate that you put it out there. Periodic compensation review committee has had its serious challenges for sure, and I think that we can and should think about this, but not necessarily this. I'm not sure about, like, what is AMI right now if we don't adjust for family size?
Foster County.
Yeah.
In the 70s.
So every legislator would get in the 70s?
No. The county executive, clerk, sheriff, and comptroller would. And then the legislators would get, you all can decide if you think the legislators work
75%.
20 hours a week or 30 hours a week. I know we all can look up what each other worked on an official record, but it's not considered a full-time position, so it should be whatever proportion of full-time we're expected to work of the average median, the area median income.
John, you did the computation right on that 75% of the...
No, unfortunately, I didn't bring it with me because
I'm sorry. It was a question. My apologies.
I think we could jump around right now, so without protocol.
Yeah, I just don't like this in any way, shape, or form. Sorry, Mr. Turner. I absolutely just... this is too... going off of the billing sheets or the hour sheets that we put in, I could tell you, for myself at the very least, if you're basing off the first 2 months or whatever it is that we put in for 3 months, that is not representative of a person on Ways and Means. This time of the year, those numbers are certainly not accurate. And to use that sheet as the guide for how many hours we put in, it's just not an accurate reflection. And I just, I think, you know, Chair Bartels was right, that, you know, that while the periodic compensation review committee, I just think it needs, if it was done better, this would not be a problem.
Aaron?
I appreciate Legislator Erner, you know, bringing this resolution forward, you know, and for discussion. I share a lot of the concerns of Legislators Gabaris and Chair Bartels in regards to, I don't think that this is the best way going forward of dealing with periodic compensation review. I think the periodic compensation review committee is kind of the best of some not so great options, probably. That it's kind of like democracy is the worst form of government, except for all others that have been attempted. So I'm not in a position to be able to support this evening. Again, I appreciate the discussion on this, but I just think that this is not the right way to go about setting legislative salaries or salaries for other Ulster County elected officials. So I can't support this right now.
Thank you for your comment. All in favor? Opposed?
No.
674 we did. Madam Chair, we're near the end.
Yeah.
675.
I'll make the motion to discuss.
Did I hear a second, John?
Second. And 75 is pretty good. Too.
I'm sorry, Chair. Go ahead.
Well, since we're getting near the end, I want to just thank everybody on the committee and Legislator Erner and counselors for all their hard work on this, because everybody really did come together. Three counselors, I know you all worked at a pretty short deadline to get a lot done, and this committee had multiple meetings, and Legislator Erner participated in them. Again, I'm just grateful to have colleagues like you all who came to the table ready to talk and work through this. This goes for the other resolutions as well as it relates to charter, but I think this is really important that we get this done.
And I'd like to commend you, Chair. You're the one that pushed to get this done this year, under your guidance, and we appreciate that. Aaron?
Kudos to all as well, and I just want to thank. I think it should be noted as well that to thank Clerk Mahler and other legislative staff who assisted with with all of the meetings and making sure that we had all our pins in the right places. I very much appreciate all the work that you did, in these long hours that we had for these special meetings to make sure that we got the information that we needed, and I'm very pleased with with the outcome of these proposed charter changes. I think it's very strong, and I think it's great work that the committee did, and I'm happy to have been a part of it, and just want to say thank you to everybody that was of assistance to it.
And I do have an amendment. Clerk Mahler just informed me that we're going to be starting at 6:10 instead of 6:30 for the public hearing.
I'll make that amendment.
All in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
All in favor of 675 amended?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Oh, do we want to talk about any new business, old business, or you just want to adjourn?
Is 551 not in our packet? I'm making some mistakes. I don't know why I see it.
I can speak to that. I withdrew it.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we need a motion to adjourn?
That you do.
I will make the motion to adjourn.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Aye.